This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 522, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Jose Jones told me a long history. He got friends like Paco, Pico, Piedra, La Muñeca.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 522. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
I love you.
And Ron Richards. Thanks, Josh.
I'm riddled with it.
We are iFanboy. We like old jokes and comics. Every week we read a stack of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book, other books of the week. We'll do some listener mail, other fun stuff. It's a good old rocking good time. I don't know. I'm on cold medicine.
Here we go.
Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll be some spoilers. Suck it up and exercise some caution.
I thought you were telling me to exercise. I was like, whoa, buddy.
Also exercise. This is how I got sick.
Let's tell me how to live.
I went to the gym with no immune system. This is what happens. This week, Ron J. Richards had the pick.
Okay. I don't like that, but well, I'll allow it. I had a nice little, it was a manageable week. It wasn't too many books. It was, but it also wasn't kind of a famine in terms of not enough books. And I went through my stack and I did my typical reading in order of the ones I'm most excited about or whatnot. And I'll give it to this week that a surprise in the stack. I took a chance on Jonesy number one from Boom under their Boombox imprint, mainly because it was written by Sam Humphries, and I do enjoy Sam's work, and with art by Caitlin Rose Boyle, and I didn't quite know what to expect from it.
Well, Boombox is their all ages line, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it's all ages. I think Boombox is more like their indie line.
Lumberjanes is in it. They're all, and Boom is all indie.
Yeah, I know, but within that, Boom is very. I don't like. Honestly, I'm not a big fan of the imprint within the imprint within the imprint, because it's like, just put out, you know, put out what you need to put out, you know, like don't try to label it. But according to their announcement, when they announced Boombox back in 2013, Boombox is an experimental line of titles created just quote unquote for the love of it.
Isn't that all comics?
One would think. I mean, I guess this is the idea of the stuff that's even more experimental, or
so
even
they don't
more
have to make money then, because they're making it just for the love of it.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess that's a good way to a good
you
way.
Guys,
to
these are marketing terms. They may not be reflective of reality.
And it shouldn't be reflective of the work, because honestly, there's really not a lot experimental about this comic, and there's really not a lot that should be, you know, kind of pigeonholed. This is just a straight up good indie alternative, you know, kind of energetic, youthful comic. And I think the comparisons to Scott Pilgrim are going to be rampant in this discussion. The art style alone, as well as just the embracing of youth culture and kind of breaking the fourth wall and little jokes like that. But that's fine. I mean, like, it's definitely a type of, you know, genre in terms
it's
of
a comic
you know,
book.
Yeah, it's a comic book. It's got art. It's got words. Now, this book just kind of exploded to me in terms of energy. And
this book is how you say is exploding to me.
I just felt a lot of energy coming out of it.
I have much to see energies at me come with these six comics.
So to dive into the book, the book is about a character named Jonesy who is in high school.
It's exploding to me, Ron Richards, like Fanboy Duck.
It's exploding to me. So this girl named Jonesy who's in high school, and we get introduced to her very aggressively in the beginning as she talks, breaks the fourth wall and talks to the reader and kind of introduces you to her world. And it's in and around Valentine's Day, which I thought was very apropos considering this episode is coming out on Valentine's Day. And she is full of angst because her school is doing the buy a carnation for charity and give it to someone, which is something my school did as well too. So I could actively relate to this because that was always miserable because you had so much anxiety wondering if you were going to get a flower, if you sent a flower, all that sort of stuff. It was just really awful. But through her angst around Valentine's Day, we find out that she may or may not have some sort of power. And that power may or may not be to make people fall in love with anybody but her.
A little weird.
Yeah, a little weird. And it's I like how it was ambiguous as to whether or not the power was actually real or not. And exactly
it
what the
seemed to be kind of real. They all went crazy like zombies.
towards the end. Yeah, it really did. And, you know, and this was just kind of, you know, like high school, you know, angst and kind of wackiness that, and it just really resonated with me. Of all the things that I read, this kind of reminded me of what I've been looking for, at least in terms of comics, which is something that's not like anything else that's on the stands right now. And as I, you know, read through the week's worth of superhero books and the other indie titles that were out here, this is the one that I really felt as if, you know, Humphreys and Boyle really worked together nicely as a team in terms of, you know, putting together, you know, like I get a sense of Sam's a writer who I feel as if has a lot of great ideas and a lot of potential. And it's just a matter of finding the right titles to kind of utilize that potential. And I feel as if him working with Boyle on this title really, you know, kind of, you know, gives a good kind of creative harmony in terms of writer and artist, in terms of getting across the ideas that he has in his head and giving you that sense of, you know, just kind of wackiness. You know, like this is kind of a story that, you know, like kind of cartooning style of, you know, that's similar to Brian Lee O'Malley makes sense because it's just kind of so out there. But yeah, no, I really liked it. I liked seeing something different. I liked seeing something colorful and something really electric. And when I finished the issue, you know, I saw it's a 4-issue miniseries. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be a nice little fun, nice little story. So yeah, I mean that's kind of what did it for me. I imagine you guys did not agree with me on it, or I imagine that you guys probably weren't as enamored as I was.
It's definitely a book for you.
Yeah,
there were bits of it that made me laugh, but overall this was not for me. It's fine. I mean I get it. I totally get it. It just wasn't my cup of tea.
I finished reading it. I made it to the end,
which I feel like for you is a major accomplishment.
I was really trying. I wanted the people at home to know that I tried. But I have nothing to contribute to this discussion.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that it's very youth-oriented. You know, like there are you know, multiple emojis used.
I'm 3 months older than you.
But I mean, you know, in that it's not, I mean, I get that it's probably not, we're not exactly the target audience, which is totally okay as well too. I mean, like I could see this being a real, you know, like, you know, a good introductory to alternative comics for somebody who's in high school or in college and kind of that, you know, and this is a topic that we talked about a little bit on previous shows. We're going to talk about it again in the emails later in the show. You know, I like imagining a world like Scott Pilgrim hit for us, I think, at the right time, maybe even a little later.
It was a little late. I remember having that thought.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it won me over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eventually. And but when I read this, I mean, what I really thought was, I don't know who this is for. I don't know if it's good. I'm not seeing anything to grab onto, even in the sense of me, you know, like projecting myself as a younger person. Obviously, I can watch, you know, teen comedies or whatever and sort of get it. But like just structurally wise as a comic book, I wasn't finding a lot here to grab onto. It was like watching one of those cartoons that a lot of people seem to think are funny, but I don't.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because I don't think it's a matter of like, I don't think I particularly found it very funny. I mean, like, I think what kind of grabbed me about it was that, you know, like understanding, you know, like we all get teen angst and we all get kind of that, you know, high school level kind of those kind of stories. I really connected with the Carnation thing and the Valentine's Day thing because that's something that I could actually relate to and could remember.
That sounds awful, by the way.
Yeah, we didn't do flowers, but we had cards for sure.
Oh, the flowers were just awful.
People had cards. People would give out cards. Yeah,
it was so disruptive. Like I can't think of one thing more disruptive to a school day than every period having flower delivery happen, and then everyone kind of, and like it doesn't matter who you are, you know, like everybody wants to know.
Did you go to school in a TV show?
I think he did. Was there any chance it was called Bayside where you went?
No, I mean it was just a regular, you know, it was just a regular.
Did you go to school in Beverly Hills?
Was Belding?
I wish.
Or a Belding?
I wish.
That sounds like one of those things that I would have socially removed myself from before I gave it a chance to hurt me.
Yeah.
The Josh Flanagan story.
Stop playing your game, pal.
Yeah, but so I really kind of related to that, and then once that kind of, you know, kind of I connected with that, it was more just kind of the going for the ride and like and yeah, I mean like the Scott Pilgrim comparison is obvious. I mean like it's hard to look at Caitlin Boyle's artwork and not, you know, hear the echoes of it or see
it's
the echoes of it.
A bit more idiosyncratic than Scott Pilgrim though.
Yeah, it's a little more, I would say it's a little more left of center, you know, like it's a little past the point of how deep O'Malley goes.
Scott Pilgrim, you know, was out there, but this felt more freewheeling. I felt like this comic was shouting at me.
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of it also was because there were a lot of explanation points. No, I think the colors by Mickey Quinn were just, I keep falling back on the word electric. Like, this book feels electric. It feels energetic, you know, and that's really what, you know, like Josh, you're saying, like, in terms of something to connect with, that's really what, once I got past the Carnation kind of reminiscing and going, oh yeah, I hated that. As I read it, I just felt that momentum and felt that energy. And I just thought it was, I thought it was pretty special to me, at least. Yeah, not for everybody, but if you're looking for something different, if you're looking for something off the beaten path, that's say give it a shot. If you'd like Scott Pilgrim, I think it definitely has echoes of that. But
if you like Scott Pilgrim, though, it also has echoes of that.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the sense that, like, I was like, oh, it's sort of Scott Pilgrim, maybe, but not. And I almost feel like that was a drawback. Like, it felt like it was, I guess, you know, sort of aping it, I guess, a little.
Well, yeah, no, but I wouldn't say it was aping it. I mean, in terms of, I mean, maybe maybe I could see that possibly on visual style.
It's not even an accusation. It's the feeling that I got reading it more than that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I like that. I'm excited for the full 4-issue miniseries to see where it goes. I mean, it's definitely a, you know, an emo-esque, you know, kind of, you know, it's all about, you know, wanting to be loved and
but
you know,
not,
feeling that.
But really wanting to be loved, but not.
Yeah, exactly.
That I can relate to.
Love me, don't love me. Love me, don't love me.
Yeah, no, yeah, like, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm curious to see where it goes for the remainder of the miniseries. And it's nice to go off the beaten path every once in a while. So there you go. Jonesy number one from Boom. Check it out if that sounds interesting to you.
So I feel like we talk about Rick Remender's books a lot. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, I feel like the people are going to say, can you please stop talking about them? But they're really good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Over and over again. And I want to talk about Low number 11 specifically because, like, out of all of those last books, it's funny. This is the one I was least interested in. I almost dropped it a couple of times. And then I kept going, ah. I like what he does. I like, and I mean specifically Rick in this instance. I don't love the Greg Tichini art. This almost feels like, if you look at it, it feels like it was like a European book that somebody came in and translated and put like modern dialogue in. Like, it's just very strange, but it doesn't. It's a compliment. I know that doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, it sure didn't. Yeah. But I know what you're trying to say. I mean, right. like Tocchini's art style is unlike anybody else's
out
there, and
I
think
I love him.
I mean, when I opened up Black Science this week, like first page, I was like, Jesus, it doesn't do that for me. I guess is what I'm getting at. Like he does a fine job, and it's got a style. There's not.
You saw Ribic all over again, Ron.
Oh, yeah, it really is. It really is.
Let me get to the point.
Okay.
This is the first book back after a little bit of a hiatus. As they're going sort of into the next story of a thing, and I found myself really glad that I had stuck with it. I really enjoyed this, like, because this world that they've created is so weird. It's very strange, and I found there's a very long sort of multiple paragraphs on the inside front cover that sort of explain where we are, and I really needed that. And once I read that and I had myself a place, I read the book and I was like, this is also really good, just like those other ones. And, you know, everything works perfectly in itself. Greg Tichini is the perfect, correct person for this book. And I really dug it. And I'm glad I had sort of walked away from it for a little bit. I thought, okay, that's a book I don't have to keep reading because I don't want to. And damn it, I do. But I really like the sort of relationships between the sisters that are existing, and then this other sort of third character came in, and now they're going to go on an adventure in a submarine. And but then there's lots of stuff going on. It's another really good book. And you know what? Rick needs to stop it.
He's on a creative tear. I mean, taking the step away from doing mainstream work and focusing on his creator-owned work, I think has given us some of the best comics. I mean, and also Black Science 20 came out this week. I don't think we're talking about this as well. Again, it's crossing into the. It's just stupid good. It's just like it's really great to see the. Creative, you know, the creative explosion coming out of him within the different genres and the different types of stories and working with the different artists. I mean, like, you know, Low is completely different from Deadly Class, completely different from Black Science. It's I think we're definitely at a lucky time with Rick and his creative output with all this stuff.
Peak Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it really is. And it's funny because there's some guys that have a voice and that can be a drawback, and some guys that have a voice that you and for him, like, it's his books are clearly his books, you know, like there's a questioning, an angry questioning that sort of happens in his characters in his books, and I like that. I find it comforting in this instance for whatever reason. Just another really good series. Like, it's probably my least favorite of the series, but it's still like a really, really good series, which is a good track record, I guess, over average.
Yeah.
Now, Josh, what did Ron tell us right before we started recording?
I don't remember.
That this was a perfect script. The script contains no errors.
Oh, dang it. I was so close.
You flew too close to the sun and you bragged about it.
Too close to the sun.
All new X-Men number 4, not number 1.
Sorry.
From Dennis Hopeless and Mark Bagley, Andrew Hennessy, Nolan Woodward,
Corbin. I gotta say, I think this is my favorite X-Men book.
It's super fun.
It was funny because recently a prominent writer for Marvel who used to write the X-Men was in town, and I was hanging out with him, and we were talking about the X-Men books, and I was expressing some of my discontent about the whole, you know, like, let's not say what happened to Scott and like that whole, like, you know, which we've complained about here. And he was just like, well, what would you do? You know, like, kind of stuff. What would you do with X-Men? And I think that Dennis Hopeless is doing with All New X-Men the closest to what I want out of an X-Men book, which is just, you know, a cohesive team, not too many characters that are, you know, that are being heroic and having, you know, realistic, relatable problems within themselves, within their own personal relationships. And this is the closest to it, I think. I think that, you know, this particular issue, like, I don't really get what they're doing as a team. Like, I get, you know, I guess that they're, you know, basically just gallivanting around the world, going wherever there are problems. And Hank McCoy's made kind of like a problem detector, and they have the BAMF who teleports them to wherever they need to be, you know, to be heroes. But within that, you know, we're starting to see.
Sounds like you get what they're doing. That's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, so I guess I do get what they're doing, but I don't get what the purpose is. Like, I want a home base. Like, I want the mansion.
Not that X-Men. They're the weird out of time ones. And I think what's interesting about this particular team is that because this is such a specific team, you know, you can't like swap members in and out really, because it's about the out of time guys. I mean, Jean's gone; she's on another team. But other than that, it's everyone else. They get to actually grow, and we get to actually follow them, right? So, what's interesting to me about this issue was Wolverine or X-23.
Well, she's Wolverine now, so yeah. Go with it.
X-23.
There's a line.
Is completely different than when we met her originally in this book. You know, she is fully embraced falling in love with Angel and being a girlfriend and being this power couple in the team and being heroes. And it's freaking Angel the fuck out. And I like that development because it's so different from where they first got together.
And
I like, you know, we've been following that for a couple of years now, or at least it's felt like it. This book is probably coming out weekly. It's probably only been 3 months.
In their time, it's really only been like a month and a half at that. Yeah.
But I think
we've been writing X-23 since forever.
Right. Yeah.
Two thoughts.
Yeah.
One, Dennis Hopeless is the real deal. And I feel like we don't think of him in that instant, in that way.
This is the highest profile book he's been on, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. But it's weird because everybody else seems to move up so fast.
True.
And he's just doing his work. And it, like, this, hey, guys, this works really good, but he doesn't get the same kind of accolades in the same way as some. But I don't know. I feel like he needs to have broken through more than he has. And I guess that's a little up to, you know, people talk.
Go to page 7 on your app. I've always been a Bagley fan, and you guys have been harder on him than I have. I'm always defending him. I think he does good work in this book for the most part. But page 7, Cyclops has no eyes.
Yeah.
Well, that was my
second point. That visor's up all around his forehead.
That was my second point, is that I was going to, because I didn't read this, but I was going to be like, I mean, if the thing holding me back is like, I don't really want to read a Bagley book, and I was going to ask.
It's good though, and he's good.
I mean, it's passable. I mean, I don't know, it's more than passable. I mean, like, it's well. I mean, Bagley is one of the greats, and so it is good. It gets the story across. If there was a dynamic artist that if put Nick Bradshaw on this book, or put although here he did Wolverine the X-Men, but put a artist who's newer, who's got more excitement around him, I'm probably raving about this book. Mm-hmm. But for now, you know, given you know, it's better than Greg Land. You know, I'd rather have this than
he's
Greg Land.
He's doing a good enough job that I noticed the panel that was bad. It stuck out. Like, the rest, he's doing some really dynamic. There's a great shot of her jumping through the pane of glass and then jumping through the fire. Like, he draws Wolverine's costume really well. The art is fine. If you can get through it in Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man, you can get through it here.
For some reason, like, that fit. It's like you take a guy who's like really great in one band, and you're like, oh, I like that band. And then later you put him in a different band, and it just sounds exactly like the guy who was in that other band. It doesn't fit. Like, that's. Yeah. It's like that for me. And I don't know if it's like, you know, a thing I used to like, but I don't so much now.
Give this issue a try. I think this is the start of a new arc, according to the cover.
Yeah.
Marvel's really. It's number 4.
Oh! It's two typos.
Yeah, there's the second typo. I see it now. God dang it. No I spelled Hopeless's name wrong in the script. Anyway.
No one has ever done a perfect script. It's never happened.
It's never. It's impossible. It's just too much. There are too many variables.
It's riddled.
Too many moving pieces. So I would give this a shot. This is the start of a new arc, as they helpfully tell you on the cover, which I actually am not making fun of. I think they should do more stuff like that.
Yep.
To tell you that a new arc is starting here.
Agreed.
Check out number four. You can totally read this one without knowing what's happened previously. They give you enough information. It's the same characters we've been following the whole time, except for they added one or two. It's good. It's very good.
Yeah, no, like I said, I think it's my favorite X-Men book as of right now. So, yeah, definitely stick with it. Are you guys reading Wade's Avengers, or am I the only one?
I'm not.
You're not? Okay.
I tried, and then I just didn't care.
Okay, well, I'm mainly reading it right now because of the Mahmoud Asar art, and I feel like that's what we talked about last time I talked about this book. But this issue, and I feel, is it weekly? Like, didn't it just come out?
Get those books out. Get that market share up.
I'm telling you, that is exhausting me.
It really
schedule is just, I'm full. I've had enough.
Yeah. But the thing about this issue which really struck me is just the difference in tone. Like, I think I got too used to literally a decade of Bendis and Hickman Avengers to now reading Wade's Avengers is just like it's like snapping my neck back and I can't the tone change is too much.
You don't like it.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. It doesn't feel right.
But you had like, so many years before that of Avengers who were that kind of tone.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, no, with the Bendis and Hickman tone. Like,
no,
I think I got
before
too,
that.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, I'm having a hard time with re-entry into the series with Wade at the helm. It's just this. Apparently, there's something wrong with the Vision, and he's causing strife internally without people knowing, and that leads to both Ms. Marvel and Nova getting kicked out. But it's one of those things where you don't quite know what's going on, and weird things are happening, and you know something's wrong, and you're just waiting for the characters to realize it, and you don't know what the explanation is. Mm. Which I get is a story device, but it's not meant to make me feel comfortable
as a reader.
I hate it. I really do.
You can't
stand it.
You won't abide it. You need all the information. I need the info. Yeah.
Not that I need all the info. It's just, I don't know. But the thing is, there's something about the tone and there's something about this team and the makeup. Like, it's not, you know how sometimes, like, it clicks and then it doesn't click? It is not clicking for me. But Mahmoud Asar continues to be awesome. And so as long as he's drawn it, I'll still read it because I think he's great.
Yeah. He is great.
It's just not clicking for me. Just not clicking. I need that click.
The Mark Wade can go either way.
Yes.
He's always got a voice and a point of view, and sometimes you like it and sometimes you don't.
But that's the thing is that, like, what's funny is that Mark Wade is not – don't get me wrong. Mark Wade, award-winning writer, have a tremendous amount of respect for him. He's written some amazing, amazing things. He's also missed the mark quite a bit sometimes.
The kids. The Flash kids.
The Flash kids is the one of the biggest examples, but that's not the only one. I feel like there are other times where he didn't quite nail it. And I think this might be one of those cases where it's like his work on Daredevil was inspired and it was focused and it clicked. It just worked. Whether it was Somni or going back to Paulo Rivera or whatever artist he was working with, it just worked. But for some reason on this Avengers side, I don't feel like he has something to say with this. You know, I'm sure he would debate and tell me that he does and just be patient and read it through or whatever. But I don't get that same – like when you read that first issue of Daredevil, you knew you were reading something special, right? Remember that? Like and I don't get that same je ne sais quoi from this.
You can't do that every time.
Yeah. But no, exactly. Yeah.
If your book is called, you know, All New, All Different Avengers or whatever, like
– I guess that's the point. It's literally all new and all different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but if it doesn't blow you away, it doesn't blow you. Yeah. The thing is that we've come to the point where like – oh, there's a premier creator on an Avengers book, and it's like this one will be amazing. And they like they can't all be amazing.
Yeah.
And then you start to get disappointed because you're constantly being given a new number one and a new start and what and like it does it happens so often that it's not invigorating anymore.
Yep. Yeah, agreed. And also, I will say it with every issue: stop with the Alex Ross covers.
I don't think you're gonna win that one.
I don't think I'm gonna win it either. But I just but like talk about such a dramatic disconnect between the art style of the book and the cover style. You know what I mean? Like it just doesn't, you know, the cover doesn't help the book. I don't think, I didn't get to go to the comic shop on Wednesday. You know, I went, you know, I got my stuff on Thursday, but I wish that I would have liked to watch people in the store because I don't think people grab it anymore. I don't think – I feel bad. Like it feels dated now, whereas it felt vital and amazing and different in the late 90s. Now it just feels like –
I bet that, I bet an Alex Ross cover moves 20 to 30% more units.
Mm-hmm. Probably. Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah.
I think mathematically that is totally the case. I mean, mm-hmm. I am definitely of the mind now, like, I want the guy on the inside of the book doing the cover. I just do. In most instances. Ironically, you know, Astro City is an example. Like, well, they have a precedent. You put an Alex Ross cover on it. Great. That's how it happened. But most of the time, I don't want that to be the case. Because there was that told you something. That told you what you could expect inside the book.
Right.
And when you have Alex Ross on the cover, you have no idea what to expect on the inside of the book. And there's something jarring about that to me, I think.
All right. This could be the cold medicine talking, but... it's possible that DC is fucking with me directly. I'm not sure. So Batman Superman 29, the variant cover by Neil Adams, features a play on the famous Green Lantern Green Arrow cover in which, you know, they discover Speedy's on Smack.
This was, I don't know if they're doing this whole month or this
week.
Yeah,
they've been on the DC covers. And this one, Superman and Batman discover Robin doing Smack. I don't like that image. I don't need that image.
Which Robin?
It's Tim Drake's costume, so I assume it's Tim Drake.
Fuck that.
Well, of all the Robins, Tim Drake would be the one to get on the Smack.
No, Jason, he would not. Jason would be on Smack.
I guess
Tim, is the most straightforward out of all of them.
Yeah, I guess
he'd
so.
He'd be the least likely to.
That's why.
I don't like the little bit of blood on the needle, on the the big pile of heroin there. I just, like, I don't need it. Don't need this image in my life.
And red tops.
However.
WMD.
Batman Superman 29 probably would be my pick of the week. And
really?
I'll explain why.
Wasn't Lobo in this?
Listen. I'm getting there.
All right.
Don't jump ahead. So Scott Carelli, who's the host of Geek by Night and Back to the Future Minute, he tweeted at me before I read my book saying, don't sleep on Batman Superman 29 because Tom Taylor is writing the book now, and he's basically writing the pre-52 versions of these characters. And he's 100% right. This is part two of a story in which a giant alien was found on the moon dead, and she had carved with her finger the Batman and Superman symbols, looking very much like the symbol for the new movie with Superman S inside the bat. Very well done for someone dying, and looks like, well, on her back. So it was very, very impressive work.
A graphic design race.
This is just an old school, classic old school Batman Superman story where Batman's got to solve a murder because they discover that she's been murdered, and it's like a giant alien, so they look like little Gulliver's Travels, Lilliputians next to her body. And Superman goes off to follow a clue, and things go sideways on both of them, and everything's not what it appears, and Lobo shows up, and I hate Lobo, but that's a minor part of the story. Just great character work, and it really did feel, costumes aside, really did feel like we were dealing with the old school team of guys who knew each other very well, you know, not best friends, but not enemies. That characterization that felt like it had years behind it, and not this weird hybrid one we have now. And also the artwork by Robson Rocha and Julio Ferreira is great. Robson Rocha drew the first part, but he had like six inkers on it, and it was a bit of a mess. But this time with the Julio Ferreira inks, it actually was really strong art. I loved the art. I loved the story. I loved the characterizations. I hate Lobo. Hated the variant cover, but this issue made me really, really very happy. This felt like a DC book used to make me feel when I read them, which I don't get anymore, really. Really good stuff. If you like old school Batman Superman, you can check out 28 and 29 so far. Really, really good.
Even with emo Lobo.
I hate emo Lobo. I hate all incarnations of Lobo. All versions of Lobo are terrible, but emo Lobo is particularly terrible.
There you go, DC. There's your challenge. Create a version of Lobo that Connor likes.
I don't need one with low slung jeans. Looking more like Death from Sandman than Lobo.
Yeah, you know,
Is it worse or better than regular Lobo?
There's really is no better in that scenario. Huh. But if I had to choose one, it would have been the older, bigger, bulkier Lobo than skinny goth Lobo. Everybody in the New 52 lost a lot of weight.
They really did. They really did.
There's no carbs in the New 52.
Well, the thing is this, is that, you know, they're trying to, you know, show the way to be. And we have an obesity problem,
right.
So
it's aspirational.
Yeah,
Lobo wasn't fat; he just was bulky.
Well, he was healthy. He was with me in the Sears husky section.
That kind of bulk puts stress on a skeleton, you know, like
especially in space.
Not if you're Zarnian or however you say that name.
Zarnian.
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 Why did I know that?
I don't know. Why did you know that?
I don't know. I just went into a fugue state.
Anyway, goddamn Lobo. Quick break to remind you to go to ifanboy.com/support. That's how you can help the show. Three things you can do on that page. You can go to the Amazon link where if you're making an Amazon purchase, you can go through there. And we get a little piece of that action. Doesn't cost you any money. It costs Amazon some money. And you can even make that your permanent bookmark link. And you don't even have to go to ifanboy.com/support. You remove a step.
You're telling me this now? Jesus.
Also, become an iFanboy member on that page at $3 a month or $30 a year. You can help the show directly by becoming a member, and you become our favorite people, and you help us directly, and we love you very much, and you help keep the show going, you help pay for the server costs and all the different things, Josh's heroin bill.
Uncalled for.
It's when you least expect it. It's the quiet one.
I bought bourbon this week.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, man.
Wow, we've leveled up, haven't we?
Are you stripping paint, or what? Are you going to drink it?
I drank it.
Wow.
Not all of it.
In one go?
No.
Do you need to learn how to drink it, Josh?
That's an advanced move. I did look it up on Google.
How to drink bourbon. Yes, pour it in cup, put cup to lips, sip.
Yeah.
Is that basically what happened?
Whether we want to do it with water or ice, or what would be best?
Oh, boy. It's going to be cold this weekend, isn't it? Is that why you got it?
It's really cold.
It is a nice warming agent.
Yeah, I wish I'd started that when I was sick. Yeah. It would have helped.
So, as you can tell, Josh is going to have bourbon bills and soon rehab bills. So, become an iFanboy member. $3
I won't
go. $3 a year. And you can also on that page just donate any money you want, any random donation. You know what? We can do games like donate a certain amount of money and Josh will try.
Scotch is not good.
Scotch.
I had some scotch. Like
Connor couldn't finish the sentence and Josh will try cocaine.
I like that at a certain point, like just raising the bar becomes very problematic.
Well, you're at the point now where anything, I mean, like I drink scotch now because I've gone beyond, that sounds horrible, but like I need
something. You needed more.
I needed more.
Like, you're like the guy who would drink like a cup of coffee a day and it was fine, and then he found that that wasn't working, so he switched to double espresso, and then right. It was like a bunch, and then at the end you're like, well, this isn't working, and then before you know it, you're talking to Greasy Tony in the back of the club.
Like, there was a point where I realized I was drinking whiskey as a palate cleanser.
I really love where this show is just gone.
Like, if I needed something light at the bar, I'd get an old-fashioned.
I totally see that.
Yep.
Now it's nice scotch. Roma. Yeah. It's all Mike Romo's fault.
Scotch is... Yeah, yeah.
I currently have 3 bottles of scotch in my apartment.
There was literally a moment, like, 2 days ago where I thought, the next time I go visit Connor and Mike Romo, I get to have a drink with them.
Yes, you do.
I was excited about that. I was like, Mike can make one of his drinks, and I'll be like, yes, I will have one, please. Like a real grown-up. I'll be 39 this month.
I know where I'm taking you when you come to visit next time.
I'm a real boy.
iFanboy.com/support. That's where you can help facilitate our burgeoning alcoholism. All right. Ron?
Yes.
Is that worse or better than sandwiches?
Better. New Romancer number 3 is a fucking weird issue.
I wanted to highlight it because, once again, this episode's coming out on Valentine's Day with a little bit of the romance angle things. But this book just gets crazier and crazier, and I love it. It's Peter Milligan joy. You know, just fantastic.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I finish it and I go, I don't know what I'm reading here. But I'm kind of enjoying it. The art is from Brett Parson is really great. Really, yeah. Really, really great. Cartoon.
And I didn't realize that Todd Klein is doing the lettering. So there you go.
It's very bizarre. I couldn't even really describe it to someone who hasn't read it. There's a bit of a parody of technology and tech culture and startups. And then there's the Lord Byron, and it's Casanova is the bad guy, right?
Yep.
Running around in the world because this girl's developed this technology to bring their personalities into...
Reality.
They're like androids or something, right?
Yeah. They're real, but they're not real. Yeah, but they're
And then
they're
there's actual... sentient sex bots and...
Yeah.
Like you'll and, have.
It's crazy.
And then now with this issue, we've got Matahari is there. And there's a big contest to win a date with Lord Byron and have a date on the Golden Gate Bridge. And like it's just crazy.
It's funny. I mean, I laughed out loud during Lord Byron's speed dating where it was like the girl's like, all right, I don't have a lot of time. I got a lot of matches in here. You know, why should I sleep with you? He's like, I'm Lord Byron.
I'm Lord Bloody Byron.
Lord Bloody Byron, that's why.
I mean, if you're looking for something more humor-based and wacky and you know, with a little touch of the romance here on Valentine's Day, then I think definitely it's 3rd issue New Romancer. There's still time to go pick up the first 2 and have a fun little romp catching up.
Ron Richards of iFanboy says it's more humor-based.
It's more humor-based. So, there you go.
There's still time.
We're going to review my reviews now? Yeah. So moving on, this weekend showed the release of the Daredevil, not Daredevil, the Deadpool movie.
Red Masks, who knows?
The, the movie that we never thought could actually be made, and good for them. And it also, when we were talking last week about Nova, I remembered how much I enjoyed Jerry Duggan's writing. I'm like, I want to read something Jerry's writing. And sure enough, he's writing Deadpool.
Has been for quite some time.
Has been, I know. And I started reading this when it launched at issue number one, and then I dropped off just because it was weird with the Mercs and with all that sort of stuff. But I picked back up, and this particular issue gave me such a wonderful gift. With art by Scott Koblish, within the third page of the book, we get an entire cutaway view of Deadpool and the Unity Avengers new headquarters with a little game where you can help find Deadpool's gun. And like, I spent maybe 10 minutes just poring over this cutaway, laughing at the little jokes and the little things in there. That was a blast. But I mean, Jerry Duggan is a great writer, and he seems to be really dialed into Deadpool, and this is a lot of fun. And so on a Deadpool filled week, this was a nice little taste of it. Taste of the insanity.
I think I did two or three issues of this run, and I thought I need to take a Deadpool break.
Go read this issue, because there's a couple of funny parts.
Saw that because Koblish used to come on and do the sort of palate cleanser issues.
Yeah.
Like they were the ones like that would take place in the past. Those were always great issues. I think there was a couple of pick of the weeks out of there. So just reading that now that Koblish did, I was like, oh, that's always good.
Yeah. And this isn't so much a one and done or isn't kind of a pause. I mean, just Koblish is doing the art on it and it's continuing. Like Deadpool, something's nagging at Deadpool that he's missing something in his memory. So he's traveling around the Marvel Universe trying to figure out what he can't remember. And in doing that, he insults Iron Fist and digs up Doc Samson and just funny. He's getting revenge on people, like the guy who spoiled the last Harry Potter book for him. You know, it's just funny stuff like that. And it was a lot of fun. So as it should be.
And I guess, did I put this on here? I think Autumn Lands 9 on here. Again, another book that I keep thinking, maybe I don't want to keep reading it, but I kind of like it. And then it went away for a hiatus. Well, I guess it was just the delay. I'm being generous with that term.
A lot of the Image books are building in hiatuses.
In the letters, he apologized. Yeah. I had just taken it as being hiatus because this looks hard to do. So it's fine. Are either of you still reading Autumn Lands?
I moved the trade on it.
No.
Yeah, I dropped off.
It's basically the first thing was this big crisis among a bunch of people where the city, you know, was floating and then it crashed. And now we're at the point where it's just sort of a road trip. Like the young dog guy and then the human guy are on a quest, basically going through, and they find this like town full of I'm gonna say this and sound dumb, that's why I paused, sheepmen. And the sheepmen like need them to help them with their magic, and the humans like, yeah sure, and the other guy's like, we don't have anything. He's like, be quiet. And so the sheep are really nice. There's this nice sort of moral, you know, crisis that's going on in between the characters, and you know, who's going to lead and who they really are. And it's interesting. It's really, I really like the Ben Dewey art a lot. It's a really well done book.
Cool. So Batman 49 features finally the return of Bruce Wayne.
Big issue, right?
Big issue. A couple of things about this. One, really focusing on the stump the first couple of pages.
Really, like stump detail.
You couldn't escape it. You could not escape the stump.
Yeah.
This was worth noting because Yannick Paquette drew it. This is one of the rare issues of this run that Capullo has not drawn.
We were just talking about that, yeah.
I liked this because it was very un-Snyder-like, and I know he co-wrote it.
It was, you're right.
He co-wrote it with James Tynion IV. Very un-Snyder-like. So this issue, what basically happens is Bruce Wayne realizes he was Batman, but he's not that guy. So in order to be that guy, he has to institute his fail-safe backup plan, in which he basically reboots his brain back to the last time he synced it to the computer, which was before the Joker fight. Kind of like when you have to get a new iPhone. So now he's back. It's old Batman from before the Joker fucked him up. But there's an intercut with this whole story is visions of, I guess, the future. His whole failsafe program is a series of Bruce Wayne clones will just have his brain uploaded into it. And so then there will always be a Batman. What I liked about this...
Was this always happening and I just missed it?
Well, there was a reference to there was a reference or two to the program before. Comics used to do, they would always tell these bizarre future tales, and they never were the same. They never matched up. It didn't matter. It just felt like the writers could tell whatever they want would happen in the future. And this felt very much like that, because this doesn't fit with any kind of...
The once in future Thor, I will always remember that one.
Right, and it feels very much like that sort of thing, where it doesn't match up with Morrison's future, where Damian's Batman. It doesn't match up with Dark Knight Returns. It doesn't match up with anything, which I like. I like that. So... That part was very un-Snyder-like, and I kind of like when you get surprised by a writer who you think you know his style very well. A lot of stump, though.
My issue with this issue is I really, like, I didn't like Alfred in it. It felt way off.
Yep.
But he's been through.
He's lost a hand.
I disagree.
That changes a man.
His son basically finally found happiness, and he's desperate to not let him go back.
I know. You know, it's a combination of a couple things. Like, he didn't look like Alfred, as I thought, and, like, looked, like, paunchier and doughier. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't have any of that sort of stiff fortitude part of the character that I, and I understand exactly where you're coming from and he is coming from, and I got that. It just, something was off about it for me. It didn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's fine. I can see that. But I enjoyed it quite a bit.
So the news broke this week that issue 51 is the last Snyder and Capullo issue.
Yes.
How do you feel about that, Connor?
We'll talk about that in the letters column.
So. Oh, okay. Then we will. All right. Yeah.
You did the script.
I did the script. Okay. Well, and talk about endings. Didn't Starfire get canceled?
Well, we're going to talk about that in the script. You wrote the script.
I'm trying to segue into the next book.
There's two more books.
You gave me two in a row. Starfire number 9. Yes, the series is ending because all the DC books are ending again. So ending at issue 12. The reason why I wanted to mention Starfire, we haven't talked about it, I think, since it debuted. This is a Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor written series. Is that the new artist, also, another really disturbing Neil Adams variant cover.
Yes, agreed.
Really disturbing. So this issue is the first issue with the new artist.
Well, would you want to say what was disturbing about it? Or?
Okay. Similar to the other cover in which somebody's walking in and somebody shouldn't be doing something. Starfire walks in on Robin or Beast Boy. We don't know because the body's half Robin, half Beast Boy.
Really disturbing.
And it looks like he's looking at something on the laptop he shouldn't be. And he says, are you Robin or Beast Boy? We don't even know. It's creepy. But anyway, this I wanted to talk about it because of the debut of the new artist, Elsa Charity.
Yeah.
Really nice and very reminiscent of Darwin Cook.
Yep.
There's a couple of panels here and there where I thought this is very Darwin Cook influence.
Yep.
In the faces and things. That sort of cartoony style. Perfect for the tone of this book, which is lighter and funnier than your average superhero comic. So I wanted to mention that if you like that kind of art style, you should check out the last couple of issues of this series because she's talented. She's obviously, it seems like she's new, and she's only going to get better from here. She's good. She's really good.
Excellent. And so the last book, we're going to take a quick step over to Star Wars Corner for Darth Vader. Darth Vader number 16. And the real reason just why I wanted to highlight this is because this is the first issue of the next story arc, which is the Shu Turin War. But it opens with a nice little prologue of Vader stopping in to visit Sheev, the Emperor. And I cannot read Emperor dialogue now without doing the voice in my head. So
what happened at the end of Vader Down?
Vader Down, he just left. He's like, I'm done. That's pretty much what happened. Everybody's just like, all right, let's go. And they all went their separate ways.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vader up.
That's like somebody who's like, I'll have two eggs and...
Vader up!
Basically, the rebels got a beating. C-3PO lost his arms. We talked about this already, but essentially everyone just walked away.
Yep. That is how it ended.
Yep. I did enjoy seeing the Emperor in this issue.
Vader.
Yep. He's just reading it like he did.
Oh, geez. I mean, that's how you're supposed to read it.
It's great. Just show your merit, Vader. Good times. All right.
Very important to me. I didn't mean it. I'm sorry.
So those are the books that we read this week. Go to ifanboy.com and you can comment on this post to share your thoughts on these books as well as anything else that you've read this week. We want to hear from you. You can go do that at ifanboy.com. On to the voice, on to the emails. There's your other.
Beginning.
Wow, it's three. I called it out.
This one, guys, if you hadn't said anything.
He really made a big deal of it before the show about how this was the first error free script. This is not even close.
I spent time on it last night. I was working on it. Oh, man. Anyway. All right. So our first email comes from Zach from Virginia, who says, I've been thinking about this question only briefly, but across the multiverse by many alternate selves. So maybe that counts.
Nope.
No, doesn't count? Okay. What iconic comics characters would benefit by losing a hand?
Oh, fuck off, Zach. That seems mean.
It does, but I enjoyed it. Fuck off's kind of like my thing.
It's like asking which one of you most needs to be punctured by a rebar.
No rebar, please. I also like that in addition to everyone quantifying how long they spend on things, I like that even though we haven't really talked about it much, we still get rebar warnings on Twitter from people all the time, which I appreciate.
Like, yeah, like that really stuck with people.
Well, I mean, it's horrifying.
Yep.
Who needs to lose a hand? I think what's interesting, when I read the Alfred issues, I think back to Kirkman saying he really should have never cut Rick's hand off.
Yeah.
And I think about the same thing. Well, I guess since it's all moot point soon enough anyway, but... Who needs to lose a hand?
Who would benefit by losing a hand?
Okay, well, hold on. I got a couple of examples of characters who lost hand. And you tell me if Aquaman. Was it good or bad?
Yes, that was good with the hook.
Was good?
Yeah.
For a while. Good.
Ultimately? Okay. Buster Bluth.
Lucille!
I'm a monster! I hated that Buster lost his hand. By the way, he made a lot of great jokes, but then they were stuck with it.
Yep,
exactly. That's what happens when you cut the hand off.
Yeah, you can't go. Wait, okay, here we go. Going back to Star Wars Corner.
Good.
Luke Skywalker
was dealt the best because it was, we have the technology. Here's a robot hand, which I feel like all of these people should be getting robot hands. Where's Alfred's robot hand?
He knows people at Star Labs.
Exactly.
Also. There was a reason that he got his hand cut off. Luke did because his father was so much more machine. So it was to highlight the fact that he was on the way to the dark side. And then they just put a robot hand on. And we didn't really deal
with
it.
Would you say he was more machine than man?
He was more machine than man. We got the cool little moment of the adjustment to the hand and when his fingers did that was great. Yeah.
So why did he go back technology wise in The Force Awakens?
That's a very good question because that hand does not look good.
I think that the stuff just wore off, and he hasn't had like a 2-1-B there to fix it up.
He's alone on that island. They don't have a doctor there.
He's also like he's gone way to Jedi Zen. He doesn't need it. He's like that's just extraneous.
So then he should have no hand. He should have a Jedi hand.
No, I mean
Force hand. So
the covering though.
Good luck, sir.
Here is a character who might losing a hand might result in a couple of interesting stories, but then ultimately would be a burden, and that would be Doctor Strange.
Yes. Because
doesn't he use his hands to conjure spells?
But the whole point of him being Doctor Strange is that he lost the use of his hands already.
Right, but he's now. But the finger gestures make the spells happen, right? If he didn't have the fingers, he would be depowered. But then he'd be screwed. There's no good character for this.
I don't know enough about Doctor Strange if the finger gestures are just theatrics or if they're required in the spell casting.
It's like when guitar players play and they make all sorts of moves with their faces.
Yep.
That doesn't make the sound, but you can't not do it. I think that's the
Nigel Tufnel face.
Yeah.
I think back to Age of Apocalypse when Wolverine didn't have a hand and he just had that metal stump that never really added to the story at all. It's just a way to make him look different.
What about Lobo?
Lobo could use
Take Lobo's hands. Take them both. Take his feet.
Replace it with that hook. Replace it with the hoof. Who else could be benefited by not having a hand?
Wolverine.
I just said Wolverine.
I know, but I'm saying it again.
Why wouldn't it grow back?
I agree.
Yeah. The real thing is that you need the exit strategy to losing the hand. You need a way to bring him back. That's the thing. Like Aquaman was good because he had the hook. Luke Skywalker was good because he had the robot hand.
Well, Aquaman's could turn into a hand also, right? Like it was like malleable.
Later on, they gave him some sort of malleable one. Okay. But for most of Peter David's run, it was just a hook. I feel like Batman could turn to Cyborg while they're on a JLA adventure and be like, you can make robot body parts, right? How about it? Can you make a hand?
Jamie Lannister.
Yeah, there you go. I love the metal fake hand that he uses and he catches the sword with. That was pretty cool.
Well, no, because his whole thing was that he was the best swordsman. So you take that away from him, and what's he left with? And then
just the rugged good looks.
A really good haircut.
Yeah.
The problem now is that he can't serve drinks the same way. Like it's
whoa. He also sews up wounds. He flies machines.
All right.
He uses the computer.
All right.
All right, wrap it up. Let's move on.
Brian from Astoria, Queens, Josh's old haunting grounds, says, I'm writing because I was perusing YouTube and I came across episode 218 of our old video show about the DC relaunch from 2011. When they relaunched, I was already heavy into DC and I picked up probably half the number ones that were put out. I picked up many titles I normally wouldn't have because it was a fresh start and I wanted to give them a try. Since then, I'm down to three titles, Batman, Justice League, and Nightwing, Grayson, I guess. That blows my mind because I love the DC Universe and all of its quirky and confusing histories. Reason for the email. How about an episode looking back at the launch and what worked for you guys, what didn't, what titles worked for the most for the company and least? Best new characters that emerged from the launch? Owls, Mr. Bloom, Pandora? And would you say this worked for them financially as a company? It's fitting because here we are, where most titles are nearing 52, and now there's rumblings of another relaunch. We're not going to do a whole episode. That's insane.
Yeah, that's for sure. We're not going to do a whole episode. And I don't really want to look back on it because it was 5 years ago, and if you ask me, like, but if you ask me what stuck, I mean, Batman's the only one that stuck. I feel like everything else has gone through the ringer.
If we were still doing the video show, we would absolutely be doing an episode because, God, we needed the content.
Sure, right, yeah, true.
But since we don't anymore, we'll do it here. Well, first of all, we should say, yes, there are rumblings of another DC reboot. There have been a lot of rumors in the comics press. I know people who work at DC, and they have confirmed these rumors are true, but I'm not going to say they are because I don't know.
Well, yeah, well, we Dan DiDio, Jim Lee, and Jeff Johns have all posted this image of curtains with the word Rebirth projected on the curtains. So, and Jeff Johns has posted, was going down memory lane on Instagram about his Flash Rebirth and his Green Lantern Rebirth project. So, something called Rebirth is coming, and it's going to be June. And I imagine we're going to see more details coming out of it.
Yeah, so once the solicitations hit, we'll have to. So, most likely, all the books are starting over, number one. Most likely, a lot of the characters are going to be rebooted. But we don't know. That's all speculation. Although this is a good way to get Alfred's hand back.
It sure is.
And if I may say,
all about that.
May forget that there was ever a son named Damian, ever.
Wow.
Just
forget it. That's a whole other topic, is that if you're manning the reboot, what do you do? For me, for DC, I mean, aside from getting rid of Damian and giving Alfred back his hand, I just try to replicate whatever's going on the CW as much as possible. No, honestly.
It's almost like you've read the rumors, Ron.
Yeah.
For me, it's less about, and I don't mean to insult anyone directly, but it's about they got to get some of these creators back from Marvel.
Yeah.
They lost almost all the most talented people in comics to Marvel, and they haven't been back. And the biggest problem with the reboot for me, and anyone who listens to the show for any amount of time knows, I was very pro-reboot. I've been saying for years they needed to reboot. Yep. Just the execution of the reboot was not very good. So that
did they go too far?
No, they didn't go far enough. They tried to reboot, but also keep all the old stories, which didn't make any sense when you thought about it for more than 2 seconds. And most of the creators who are now not even doing the books anymore were substandard. So there's a couple of characters I would like to see. They need to get rid of Damian, but they're already saying that he's going to be leading one of the teams, so he's probably not gone for whatever reason. But Alfred's hand and Damian are my only two wants, really, to get rid of.
I would like, I said it already, and it's probably obvious, but I want a Flash comic like the Flash TV show. That's what I want.
I want a Flash comic I can read. I haven't read a Flash comic in years. This week was a Harley Quinn team-up book with Green Lantern, and I realized I hadn't read a Green Lantern comic in probably 5 years, which was weird.
I've been casually reading it off and on and talking about it with the guy who runs my shop and stuff like that. It's had moments of ups and downs, of course, but it hasn't been awful, but it hasn't been great. That's the problem, the biggest problem. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, to point back to his question, the initial DC reboot and every other kind of stunt after that have given an initial burst in sales, but in the long term it's been a failure because now DC's that less than a quarter percent market share, while Marvel's almost at 50%, it's crazy. So I would say it has not worked, and you keep saying every time they try one of these things, it's like, well, if they, this one better work, I don't know what the alternative is, how many more failures it takes to make a change in leadership or a change
in
direction.
All we know how to do.
And that's the thing is that ultimately it's the same people running the show as before, so I'm not fully confident anything's going to be that different this time.
So, I mean, if you were to ask me, I don't have specific character things or ideas, but I would change it on the basis of aesthetic.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed.
But the thing is that they've already said they don't want any more Batgirling. Yeah. And I think that's what we want.
Yeah.
Sort of. I mean, it's not that I we've talked a lot about a DC house style. There's sort of a antecedents of Jim Lee and just sort of random dudes who do art that kind of works but is not thrilling. And for me, like make these books look amazing, and modern.
Yep.
Like bring in artists who are exciting and not artists who were exciting in 1994. Right. That's I think that's what they think sells books. And you know what? And maybe it does, but it's
clearly not. Look at based on the market share.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. Make Superman Superman again.
Right.
You know, it was a fun time. Like they didn't like. I was gonna say it was fun that they did the T-shirt thing, but they didn't even stick with that. Like yeah. Superman was all over the place. So I felt like done that story for a while.
That was one of the biggest missteps. Was they never? I felt like every time I turned around, there was a new paradigm for Superman.
Yeah.
And you never knew what you were gonna get.
Let him be Superman and let somebody just tell some of those stories for Christ's sake. You know, like do big Superman stories. Like there must be another guy besides Grant Morrison who, you know, can write epic Superman stories. And let's
or keep Gene Yang on it and get put Doc Shaner on like but we talked about this already. Like if you're not gonna get big guys like a Jason Aaron or a you know Grant Morrison or you know or whomever, you know, Jonathan Hickman or whoever else out there, although give Hickman Legionnaires and let him go to town, right? You know, I mean that's a no-brainer. You know, get really good teams that but match them up to their strengths, you know? Like I mean, clearly you've seen success. I mean, the Harley Quinn, you know, Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor, that's not, you know, it's not because she's going to be in Suicide Squad or because she was in the video games, because Jimmy and Amanda make a great comic book with Harley Quinn, who's a fun character, and you can see they're playing to their strengths.
Right.
Do that, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. Probably once they announce what's actually happening, we'll talk about it again. But I have everything I can have crossed for this, because I really miss being excited about DC books more than, you know, one or two of them.
Yeah.
But right now, if you take away all their Vertigo stuff, it'd be looking really bleak right now.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy thing to say.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for the email. If you have a question, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We'd love to have you in on the conversation. So send your emails in. Don't forget to say who you are and where you're from.
And if you like me being melancholic about the state of DC, listen to the Batman Bad Blood podcast that I did with Paul Montgomery and Ryan Haupt. That is where I went off about how Damian has ruined the Batman.
You lost world. It. You had a moment.
So you can you can hear me lament the state of Batman in the Batman Bad Blood podcast.
Wow. Well, speaking of movies, like I mentioned earlier, Deadpool comes out this weekend. I've already seen it. Connor, I believe you are seeing it.
Yes. Sorry, I was stretching.
You will have seen it.
I will have seen it before the day is done.
Yes. All right. So, and then we're going to talk about it. And so you can go look for that special edition podcast on the feed, hear what we think of Deadpool. I'm really excited to have this conversation. So stay tuned for that.
Should I see it?
Yeah, I say yes.
Okay.
Is there any chance of you seeing it in a timely manner?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, then why bring it up? Why get our hopes up?
Exactly. That's the only review that I want to hear is from the guys who know me very well. Should I see it? Because you would say right away, yes. Or no, that has nothing to do with if it's good or not.
Yes, see it.
I say yes, Josh. Definitely see it.
Yes, yes.
I have not seen it yet.
Okay.
You like to watch me suffer.
I do.
Speaking of suffering.
Hey.
I meant Billy Bats, not us. Mm. We do another podcast. It comes out weekdays called Goodfellas Minute. And every day we talk about 1 minute of the film Goodfella.
Whoa, you still can't do it. You can't do it on the show. That show, you can't say the name.
Goodfella is a prequel. Just about Joey Carbone.
And I would watch that prequel.
You're damn right you would. Ryan Gosling. Yeah. It's a transformation.
In an afro wig?
Yeah. Boulevard.
He still pulls it off.
It's a real good show. We have a lot of fun doing it. So if you like hearing us talk about things, but maybe we've used up your comic book quotient, you want to hear something else, well, I hope you like Goodfellas because there's a lot of that. Out there. So again, goodfellasminute.com every weekday. We're getting near the end. Things are heating up in the movie. We're cresting.
Well, it goes all. We still got a while. I got 2 more months.
Yeah.
The show will keep coming out until mid-April.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, go to goodfellasminute.com. And you can also, while you're on the internet, you can go to ifanboy.com. And like I mentioned, you can comment on this show, talk about this week's books or anything else on your mind about any of the other podcasts. You can comment on the Batman Bad Blood rant or on the Daredevil podcast. We want to hear what you think. And of course, you can follow us. Go to facebook.com/ifanboy or follow @ifanboy on Twitter. And you can all follow us individually. You can follow Josh @JAFlanagan to hear about his adventures in politics and records. You can follow @CSKilpatrick to hear if he's feeling well. And you can follow me @RonXO for nonsense.
Spoiler warning, I don't feel well.
Yeah.
Finally, if you like this show, you like Goodfellas Minute, you like any podcast you listen to, please go to iTunes, write a review. That's the best thing you can do in lieu of financial help by helping people find the show and by writing reviews. Introduce your mom to the podcast. Introduce your cousin. It's Valentine's Day. Introduce your date, your wife, your husband, your girlfriend, boyfriend.
Honey, tonight for Valentine's Day, I have a different plan for us. Yes. Just sit down there. Here's some headphones and earbuds. I'll be back in an hour.
It's sexy time. We did a whole video show on love. Go dig that one up somewhere. I don't even know where that one is. Introduce people to the podcast. Help spread the iFanboy love all around.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Meds are wearing off. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
Have a fun, sexy time.
What a fun, sexy time you'll have.